Tuesday the 15th of May, by the Malcolm Herman, Close Encounters.
Some years ago when I was in Shari Torah, Shavuos time, I was learning Shari Torah, so we had an invitation, a couple of myself, out for the first night of Shavuos. And as we all remember from Shiva Day, the invitation for an alternative menu was always very welcome. And so myself and my friend went, accepted this invitation, one of the couples had been there before, and I'd forgotten that, of course, the minhag of many, many families is first night Shavuos, we're supposed to have milky fruit and cheese, and the truth is, I don't really know very well with cheese. But anyway, we're there to make kiddush, and the wife comes in and says to us both, come on, you two are okay with cheese? So I said, yeah. And my friend said, yeah. And they both got up, and I turned around to my friend, I said, truth is, I don't really like cheese. He said, I don't like cheese either. So I said, why don't you say anything? He said, why don't you say anything? From this edge, he comes back with this whole platter full of cheesy things, says to me, I'm so pleased you two like cheese, because I love them to eat cheese. And I've prepared him this lovely steak. Anyway. Mr. Shem, just over a week's time, I want to share a few thoughts from Shavuos based on Pachad Yitzchak, which is actually in his paper on Pesach. It's his Maimer Ayin Tes in Pesach. And he notes an interesting discrepancy, if you like, between the Lashonos of Tefillah and the Lashonos of Kiddush. With Kiddush we say, Asher Baruch Abayim Mekol Am, who's known in the Kol Asher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has selected us from amongst the nations, who has exalted us from amongst the language, the Kiddush Shalom Yisrael. In Tefillah and the Amida, we express a very similar sentiment, but the way the sentiment is expressed is different. After B'chasana Mekol Amin, V'ahav Tzorosana, V'ratzisa Bonner, V'ravon Tzorosana Mekol Amin. Essentially the same concept. The Kodesh Baruch has selected us, we are the chosen nation, the Kodesh Baruch exalted us, but there's two distinctions in the way that it's expressed. In Kiddush, we say Asher B'chasana Bonner, it's in the third person. Hashem is the one that chose us. In Tefillah we say Atah Bachatana, you have chosen us. In Kiddush we say Asher Bachamon Mikol Am. It's a reference to Am in the singular. And in Tefillah we say Atah Bachatana Mikol Amim from Atah Mikol Lashonos. But both the people and the language are a third in the plural. Two distinctions. In Kiddush it's third person, and the reference to the Am is in the singular. In Tefillah it's second person. It's Rosh Nochas, it's direct, and the reference to the people is people in the plural. So Rav Huttner, in his inimitable style, takes us on a journey through somewhere else completely. We know there's halacha in terms of hilchot in Chosh Mishpat in Kenyan. How does one acquire an item? So the Mishnah Bava says as follows: take that. How do you acquire an item in Talmud? Mashlecha many payers. If a person, if you pick up the payers, loan not in the mois, but you don't give the money, any yachol after that. So we know that the metalpin, the way that the mekonim metalpin is through, it's through kinyan, through hagbar, in the various circumstances, the surrounding circumstances aren't for us now, but essentially it's through kinyan and hagbar, you have to pick up the item. So much so that if you have put a deposit down on an item, but you haven't actually picked up the item, then you're not committed, then you are not committed to buy. However, if you've picked up the item, even if you haven't given the money, you are committed to buy. So you go into a shop, you pick up the fruits with intention to buy. And you haven't yet given the money yet, but that's your intention to buy. You pick it up with intention to return it. Any offer left in mind, you can't renege on the sale. You can't renege on the sale. However, not low moyes, if you've put down the money, but low mashachim in appearance, but you haven't actually picked up the item at all, you put the money down on the counter, which in English law would constitute a contract. You put the money down on the counter, but you haven't actually picked up the item at all, yachol laftavot, you're able to go renege on the sale. However, avol omra mishapar, but the shopkeeper can express his frustration, and he can curse you. So the mashal, you go into a shop one day, and you see a table and chairs, and you decide you want to buy it. And you pay for the whole thing, you say, tomorrow I'm picking it up. But you haven't yet picked up the item, and he's reserved it for you. The next thing you decide, you know what, I don't want the table and chairs. So you're able to renege on the sale. However, but the shopkeeper can express his frustration, but he hasn't got the license to express his frustration in any free way. It's a very specific curse that he has to give, or he can give. He doesn't have to give, but he can give. So as follows, Mi shapara ma'am shizara mabul, mezara flaga. Who also live around, and Mi sh'ina ima b'dibura. Perek Dalet, Mishnah Beis, and Pramit Kliya. May the one, or the one who paid, who took issue with the Amshi Dara Mabel, Dara Mabel are those in times of flood, the Dara Flogger, times of Tarababa, who offered the Parayam and Mish in Omer Vivora. He will pay, he will recompense those who don't stand by their word. It's a very specific curse. So the question is, why is it this specific curse? What was so significant, as I put in the puts it, are we short of Rashaim for Jewish history, that we can link to this particular curse? Maybe Misha Para, Misha Para, Pharaoh, or Misha Parah Haman, and Misha, but why these two specific things? There were three occasions in human history where HaKadosh Baruch Hu reduced the stature of mankind. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu reduced the stature of mankind. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, it placed, as it were, so we offer his palms and mankind and reduced their stature. From those moments on, Hashem never reduced the stature of mankind. May have changed the status, the circumstances, punished by changing circumstances, but not the essential nature, the quintessential nature of mankind. The first occasion, of course, was, obviously, Gan Eden. Hashem threw them out of Gan Eden. That was a total change. There was expectations, aspirations, that this would be the proximity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for eternity, and they failed. They failed in that. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw them out, and it took till Matan Torah, so there was another opportunity to regain that proximity back to Bekas Hashem. That was a significant reduction in the stature of mankind. The second occasion, of course, was Dor HaBavel. Hashem says, my spirit, I can't no longer contend, whatever that means, with humanity. And I'm now going to reduce his year 220 to, amongst them, Mechashim. One say, of course, Pashut Pshat is that from then to the day to the Mabul will be 120 years. I would say from then on the ability for mankind to live for hundreds of years would be taken away, and the maximum would be 120 from where we get the expression to Mayav Eshim. There was a second occasion whereby the reduction was a reduction in the stature of mankind. First occasion was Gan Eden, the loss of spirituality, the loss of the vacant, the total transformation in terms of who they are. And the second one was the loss in terms of physicality, that their longevity would be reduced, and that was a significant change in the stature of mankind. The third occasion was, says our footnote, was in fact Dor HaMabul, Dor HaPlava. We know that the essential particularity of humanity over and above the animal kingdom is that ability for complex speech. The Targum translates, Ruach Chaim is Nefesh Mamala, the ability for complex speech. Even though animals can in some respect communicate, but animals can't formulate complex speech. They can't take intangible ideas and then formulate them the same way we can. As Nefesh Chaim points out, then we have three components to our Neshama. We have Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Whereas Nefesh corresponds to the basic ability to function, and the Shama at the other end of the scale corresponds to our ability for thoughts and machshavas, and the nexus, the link between those two, is the power of speech, Kaya Hadibu. That's the power, which is why that's the singularity of humanity, is that we have the ability to fuse those two worlds, the Olam above and Olam below. That's who we are. And when it came to Dor HaFlokha, beforehand they were able to communicate. Imagine the power of humanity. Any human being could communicate with any human being. That was an incredible enhanced ability for the whole of the human race. But when they sinned, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu fragmented them and changed them forever. That was the third and final reduction in the stature of mankind. After that, there was never a reduction in the stature of mankind, only in the status of mankind. The circumstances, the surrounding circumstances. But that was the final reduction. And at that moment of cataclysmic confusion, and the moment of trauma for the whole of humanity, then one can only imagine how difficult things have become. And it would only be Klal Yisrael that would have the capacity one day to restore the original stature of mankind. As the Pasuk says in Hazinu, Hahanachal Enyon Grain, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the nations their inheritance, Vafrida Mnei Adam, when he fragmented humanity, Yatzev Gevulos Amim, Kemispar Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu established the boundaries of the people corresponding to the number of Klal Yisrael. What does that mean? So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu fragmented mankind and splintered them, it wasn't a haphazard number. The number that was selected from humanity from then on was number 70. There were 70 core languages from which all other nations were developed, from which all of the other languages were preserved. And that wasn't a haphazard number. If you'd been there at the time, we would never have realized that there was significance to this number. Who would have known that there was significance to this number? It appeared to be a haphazard number. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, Yatzev Gevulos Amim Lemispar Bnei Yisrael. Why so? Because that was, as it were, the first reserve ticket to be offered on Klal Yisrael. Because only Klal Yisrael would one day restore the stature of humanity, so almost like Maxim Reforma Mater, in that type of vein. But at that moment of calamity, at that moment of tragedy, at that moment of degradation for humanity, that there was also the beginning, the seed of the future. The Mispar Bnei Yisrael, that the 70 core units, the Shiv and Nofesh, of Klal Yisrael, would come down to the shrine, would one day form the nation that could restore the stature of humanity. But that would take, to max, almost 500 years. So at that moment in time, as I say, it was covert. No one would have realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was beginning to prepare for the future Klal Yisrael, was laying the foundations. no one would have realized within the confusion that this was a designation of Klal Yisrael. It would take nearly 500 years for Klal Yisrael to have Sinai, when that would become from Tova to Ova. In other words, there were actually two moments in Jewish history where Klal Yisrael was designated. One was at Bar HaFlaga, and the other was, of course, when that came to fruition, when that became public at the Har Sinai. And if we now look at the Nuschois of Tfilah and the Kiddush, we'll see that these reflect these different moments. The first time, Asher Bachar Bonim Kolam, that wasn't a personal designation between ourselves and Klal Yisrael. There was nothing public over there. It was impersonal. Hashem was the one that chose us Mikolam from amongst the nations. There wasn't a plurality of languages at that time. There was a singularity of language and a singularity of nation. That, in Kiddush, was a reference to Bar HaFlaga. The second time, after Bachatona Mikol Amin, the second time was Har Sinai. The second time was Har Sinai. That was personal. That was direct. That was Mikol Amin. That was already a plurality of nations. There were many nations in the world. And therefore, Kiddush is a reference to Bar HaFlaga, and Tefillah is a reference to Har Sinai. So why is it with Amisha Parah that he gets this particular verse? It is as follows. A person comes into a shop and he uses his Kriyach HaZibur to engage in a relationship of commitment. The person for the shop, he was put aside. He's put aside his goods. In some respects, I want to suggest this is almost a great abuse of the power of speech in Lashon Hara in some respects. Because the purpose of the speech is to build. The purpose of the speech is creative. And you did that. You engaged in a relationship, you used the Kriyach HaZibur only, and you gained a commitment from somebody else. And then you reneged on that commitment, then you pulled back. He has a right to say, you know what you're doing? You are like the Dor HaFlaga. You have abused your power of speech to destroy as opposed to create. And therefore, that's a failure in your stature as a human being. That's a failure. Now it's true, Alpi Halacha, there's no comeback. For other reasons, there's no comeback. But in terms of, if you like, who you are, and the shopkeeper is able to focus, you know who you are? Amisha Parana, Anshi Dor HaFlaga, Dor HaMabu Dor HaFlaga, well, not forget. You have abused your power of speech. You've used it the very opposite of what it's supposed to be, and that does not go unnoticed. Yes, you can walk out of the shop with your money in your wallet. You can do that if you want to do it. You're entitled to it. But you should know that to use your power of speech in that way is a failure. It's a failure in terms of what it means in the very essence of the Kriyach HaZibur. Why is it that Kiddush is impersonal and Tfilah is a personal? Well, that's consistent. We know there's a well-known principle of Rashbam that the difference between Birchas HaShevach and Barakasha. Birchas HaShevach may start off as second person, Baruch Atah Hashem, but it always switches. Asherki Neshanim Mitzvosam, Asherki Neshtonim Mitzvosam. It always switches. Birchas HaShevach is a description of how Kosh Baruch Hu runs the world. So we start off with a sense of proximity, but then we step back with a sense of awe and description of what Hashem is. Barakasha, in its very essence, is personal. It remains personal all the way through, because it's our personal appeal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to interact within our lives. Therefore, in Kiddush, which is not Tfilah, it's Birchas HaShevach, so we focus on the description of Hashem's designation of us that is impersonal, that was at the time of Dor HaFlaga. But in Tfilah, where it is Bakasha, even on Yom Tov, the central Torah of Tfilah is a Torah of Bakasha. So then, in fact, there we describe the description of Hashem, where Hashem chose us personally at Har Sinai, whereas direct is Lashon Nosach, it was that personal close encounter, the face-to-face encounter. When I first learned this Rav Hutna, which I think beautifully, magnificently explains the Torah of Tfilah, so it occurred to me to associate Erev Desta. Now, you'll just judge for yourselves whether that's a good association or not, but that's up to you. There is a very quite well-known mimer of Rav Desta on his famous Kuntras of Bechira. And in part of the failure of Kuntras of Bechira, in terms of how free choice operates, can you explain? Yeah, so because that was the second stage of reduction of humanity. So my child is, why didn't something occur to himself? Why didn't he Misha Parana of Mauritian? And that, I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure. But I suppose it is, but he said. Yeah.
You know,
No, it doesn't. But I understand what he means. It's focusing on the fact that humanity had a certain expectation, and we've seen over the generations that they failed in that expectation, and you're as we're continuing in that phase. The climax of which was that we're going after. Now,
wasn't any specific to the work. What was it? They misused all the kirkos. Shugosh can get them. The Hishkos goes up to a fat family.
Yeah.
All the kirkos to do opposite.
Yeah. I see in those terms. This was a developmental stage of Satan. My shadow is what it doesn't also include of the original point of this. And some way it includes the kind of stages up to it for one of the first stages. Avdasta, in this context of the Torah, says as follows. We tend to think that when we make a choice, the choice happens at the moment of option. That's how we tend to think. A person is given in the sign of Lashon Hara. So, and after thinking of it, I shouldn't have said that. We tend to think, at least I certainly used to think, that the choice is made at the moment of option. You're confronted with an assignment, you're confronted with an opportunity, whether it's a ruchness assignment, whatever choice it is, a challenge in life. And you make that choice at the moment of option. Now, best to analyze is that, in fact, that isn't really the case. And the famous case that he gives is the example of the person who smokes. The person smokes and gets serious pain at night. And he can't sleep at night, and every night he makes his commitment tomorrow, I'm not going to smoke. Next morning he comes to the office, and the deliveries happen to arise, or the wrong things arise, whatever, he says to himself, you know what, one cigarette, just one cigarette. Now if you were to get him up against the wall and say to him, tell me, listen my friend, this is the choice, let's be real here. Do you want that, what's stronger, your reluctance to smoke, your inclination to smoke, or your inclination to avoid that severe pain? You couldn't sleep the whole night, you're writhing around in pain. What's stronger? If he was to face that real choice, he would say, you know what, you're absolutely right, I couldn't stand the pain, you're terrible, I'm with you. But he doesn't do that. He thinks to himself, I'll just have one cigarette, and that way I'm not going to pay. In other words, what he does is he sidesteps the real issue. A cognitive dissonance, he sidesteps the real issue and faces something. Therefore, he doesn't face the real arena of choices. He chooses an arena of choices which allows his rocks on them to predominate. Because placed side by side, those are ridiculous choices. The pain versus a single cigarette is ridiculous choices. Give me another marshal. Which is muscle that occurs to me. It's not quite the same. I think it brings out a very similar point. Let's imagine that you have a colleague at work with whom the relationship isn't easy. And you always feel that they are, this is a completely theoretical idea, but you always feel that they're not pulling their weight, they're always pushing things back across the table, and if anything goes wrong, they're shifting blame to you, and that type of person, unfortunately. Anyway, you may arrange a meeting for them 10 o'clock on Monday morning, you live quite a drive away from, Edgware, for example, and they live around the corner. And you arrive there bang on time. And now at 10:05, they're still not there. 10:10, they turn up, passing a pen thing, very sorry, didn't get the car, didn't get the other. And what's going on inside you at that time? You feel very frustrated, you're coughing inside. It's so typical of them. So typical, always the same, always there. Don't take me in, etc. Right, situation number one. Situation number, and of course you don't say that. You put on a very polite smile and say, it's fine, don't worry about it. Then, a similar situation, another colleague with whom is a very good relationship, you feel there's mutuality, you feel there's a shared responsibility, they're always trying to make your life easier. But the same situation, 10 o'clock, you arrive at 10 o'clock, they arrive at 10:10. And same thing, exactly the same thing. And they're very apologetic, they couldn't tell, don't worry about it, I've checked a few emails, and a few phone calls, of course, my friend Rick, or whatever it is, wonderful, don't worry about it, so I'll just drive to myself. That's amazing, isn't it? Exactly the same situation, but your reaction is completely different. Now, if the choice is at the moment of reaction, but how is it with one you react? Now, that is as follows. Now, basically, the challenge of Bechira is to face the real choice in my mind. Because we have a certain, almost like a paradigm within my mind, and the choices that I make are basically the translation of the paradigm that already exists in my mind. With one particular person, you already have a kind of negative paradigm, and the way that you react is in the translation of that negative paradigm. With the other person, you have a positive framework within your mind. And the way that you react is in the translation of that. Or, in his example, the challenge is to face the real choice within my mind. What's the real choice? Is the real choice the pain versus cigarette, or is the real choice just one cigarette? If I was being real with myself, I'd say to myself, this happens every single day, and it's clear I'm not facing the real choice, because I have one, and then another, then another, then another. Therefore, the challenge of Bechira is not to focus on the moment where the choice happens, but the challenge of Bechira is to focus on what is the reality in my own mind. What is going on in my covert, in my subconscious, in my own mind? That, if I really want to make changes in my life and make more meaningful choices, there's no point starting or focusing only on the moment of option. I have to be honest with myself and say what happens in my own mind. But this is true wherever, you know, let's say we struggle to done with Kabbalah. So is it because, you know, because I'm so busy, because I've got other things in my mind, or is it because maybe in my mind I need to work on my Yerushalayim, I need to work on my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and then that would automatically translate into how I react differently. And it's more at a subconscious level that the real choices happen. So, and therefore, as I say, if one wants to make different choices, one has to start with what's going on within one's mind, not simply focus on the moment of decision or the moment of option. That is very often simply the translation of the paradigm that exists within me, and then it's almost a foregone conclusion, it's almost inevitable. So I saw a certain association in the following way between this Barbesta and this Shaputna. Because what happens to Klal Yisrael and Har Sinai? Klal Yisrael and Har Sinai, they spend 49 days from Sfira, changing what happens in their mind. You know, almost everybody asked Natasha, Nas and Nishma. Nas and Nishma, Klal Yisrael reacted automatically, Nas and Nishma. There was no consideration. They didn't ask for a second opinion. They didn't ask for a minute or so. Nas and Nishma. Because what happened was that for 49 days from Pesach, they built up this connection with Kodesh Baruch Hu, until it came to the point from their covert position. Therefore, the over response was automatic. It was automatic, of course, Nas and Nishma. They wanted the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. It was without question at all, because they had developed a mindset where they understood that there could be no greater glitz, no greater happiness for them than to be the Am HaNivchal. And the whole process of Sfira was and is a process of developing mindset such that when it comes to the moment of Shavuos, when it comes to the moment of Matan Torah, there's no question about it at all. The automatic response is Nas and Nishma. What else could be wanted by that relationship? The response is automatic. It's no longer a decision. But the decision has been made previously to focus on, within the mind, developing that association, that connection with Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it struck me that in certain respects, we have a parallel between what happened for over 500 years in terms of Kodesh Baruch Hu coming to Har Sinai, Kabbi Yachol, and our coming to Har Sinai. Kodesh Baruch Hu comes from 500 years beforehand from a covert position, from Dar HaSlava, whereby no one would have known that this was the Kodesh Baruch Hu's third definition of Israel. That moves through the hundreds of years and through the generations until it becomes open, overt association with Kodesh Baruch Hu. But we also, as Klal Yisrael, had to move from a position that was covert. We were sunk in the morass of immorality of Mitzrayim, and had to work on a whole developmental mindset, a mindset change, so that when we come to Har Sinai, we're also ready for that face-to-face encounter with Kodesh Baruch Hu. And for us, it's open, it's overt, it's absolutely everything. That the automatic response is a response from Nas and Mishra. Both parties, as it were, Kabbi Yachol, move from the position of the covert, of the concealed, to the revealed and the open and direct. And there is, I'm not sure if this is, the next point I'd like to add is a kasher or not. But it has always struck me, it's very fascinating. Of course, for Shavuos, there's no symbols. We have no symbols for Shavuos. There's no matzah, there's no chometz, there's no something. What?
Tuesday.
Sometimes there's no symbol, you know. But, now, so there's no symbols. So in essence, of course, the symbol of Shavuos is Torah itself. Torah itself. But I'd like to share with you something that I once had an interesting challenge, which was, and I think this is the motive here as well, to present to teenagers who are not religious, a Shira on Pesach. And these, you know, the idea of presenting a matzah to teenagers and hoping this would by itself cause inspiration was a long shot. It was a long shot. So, and I tried to analyse what is a symbol. So I actually did an experiment with teenagers. I printed a sheet of paper with 10 different symbols on, very famous symbols, apart from one. There was Coca-Cola, there was a heart, there was a swastika, there was all sorts of things. One symbol I'd made up completely. Just made it up. And I gave them this piece of paper. And I said to them, please write down by each symbol what are the emotions that symbols conjures up. And they wrote down a swastika, a state surf, and a heart, a Coca-Cola, realization. But none of them, of course, could associate any emotions with our symbols that I made it up. And I wanted to demonstrate to them, we live in a world which is so symbol-driven that we tend to think that the symbol by itself has meaning. That's what we've been educated by the advertising gurus. The symbol itself has meaning. Of course, the symbol has no meaning. It's only because we associate the symbol with lots of ideas that are outside of us. And the single symbol becomes the conduit between the ideas beyond us and ourselves. That's what it is. The symbol is a link that bridges a gap. That's what a symbol is. But a symbol by itself means nothing unless we understand the background education to the symbol. So I said it's not surprising that a matzah doesn't inspire. If we don't want a matzah, it's supposed to link us to. The matzah is a link between the external and myself. The message beyond and my own person. That's what a symbol is. So it struck me that if that is the case, which it seems precious, It's obvious with Shavuos we don't have simcha, because the essence of Shavuos is that face-to-face encounter. That is what the essence of Shavuos is. An engagement ring or a wedding ring is a symbol of a relationship. But the mice, when the husband and wife are together, you don't really need an engagement ring, because it's a living in it, in its vitality. It's there, and it's in real time. It's there in real space. So therefore, the essence of Shavuos was that both parties to this engagement, both parties to this, were face-to-face. The suggestion that you need a symbol to remind us of the relationship would, in certain respects, almost be an insult to what Shavuos was and what Shavuos is. Because the symbol of Shavuos is there are no symbols. It needs no symbols. It is that close encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that face-to-face encounter. And that is really what Shavuos is all about. To be able to internalize for ourselves the personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that we feel it on a person-to-person basis. We feel it on a person-to-person basis. So I'd just like to finish with a story that I heard first hand, which I think is a very powerful story of an example whereby sometimes in our minds that sometimes we do have moments which are moments of opportunity to, what shall I say, to draw up from the latent to the active. Moments of opportunity that allow us to draw from the latent to the active and cement that active relationship. There is a gentleman in Israel whose organization is famous, but he's not so famous, amazingly enough. He runs Arachim, he's in the Yossi Valley. Arachim is one of the largest Jewish organizations in the world. They employ about 600 people, and they run 280 seminars a year. Last year, my daughter and I went for a tour of Arachim. I have to say, we employ about 24 people. It's up the night, they call us up visiting Tesco's. Most encouraging comment to make here and there was that, oh yes, we also sell bananas. But Mr. Yossi Valley is an incredible person, quite incredible, and he's also his organization. And he told me himself where he became from. And it's a magnificent example of how there are moments in our lives which present opportunities to face real choices and to be able to draw up from ourselves what is latent, what is dormant, and to really allow them to become active. He said that he was brought up in the Bronx in the States. I think he's originally Israeli, and then his family moved back to Israel. He was a completely secular Jew. This story is actually in one of the Magid Speaks books, but I heard it firsthand. And on one occasion, his wife called him out, wanted to move back to Israel. And she asked him to buy some food for the kids, that she hadn't time to make supper, so some food for the kids. And he went to their favourite restaurant and picked up this queue, and there was a queue there for basar lavan, cool little basar lavan. And he was standing in the queue there, waiting to buy this for his kids. And suddenly, an anecdote from his youth, with which he's grown up, comes back to him. His grandfather was a rav in pre-war Europe, about another town, I can't remember the name of the town. And when the Nazis came to this particular town, so they schlepped out, it's a Darukam. They schlepped out everybody from the town, they picked on the Rav as the leader of the town, and they had there, in front of him, and they said to him, either you eat, or we're going to shoot you. And he said, I'm not eating. He said, we're going to shoot you. He said, you do what you like. And they shot him. Yossi Zivinger was standing in his queue, in Israel, buying food for my kids, which my grandfather wouldn't eat on pain of death. And suddenly it triggered me, there must be something wrong here. So he steps out of the queue, goes home, says to his wife, we're missing out on something here. And they actually went to an Arachim seminar. And that time Arachim was only a 5-man organization or something. And subsequently there was another seminar and became committed to Arachim, subsequently joined the Arachim staff and built it up to where it is today. We're still looking for such participants in our seminar. But what does that mean? There was something latent there, which it always ignored and always ignored and always ignored, always pushed aside. But there was a moment when Kosh Baruch Hu confronted him with a choice. What was the choice? The choice wasn't to buy the meat or not to buy the meat. The choice was to face the real choice within my own mind. To say he could easily have made 1,000 excuses. Well, you know what, that was in the past, and then my grandfather was, etc. He could have made lots of excuses. The choice was to face the real choice head on. And to face the real choice head on, and the consequences of that choice head on. And that is, to my mind, what the challenge is for us. The challenge for us within ourselves is to face the choice of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and recognize that the Segula of Shavuos is that once a year particularly we have an opportunity to build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu face to face and to internalize it in ourselves and to take us through in the month of year.